Hello, my friends. It's Tuesday, March 3rd, 2026, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee. And welcome to the Radical Russ Show, your home for pothead political punditry, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in Southern Oregon. And it goes down smooth. Hey! On this week's Smoke Session, let's talk about how the war in Iran, or Operation Epstein Fury, is just part of the broader white Christian nationalist's mission from God. We'll also talk about the call for representatives to return to Washington, D.C. to vote on a war powers resolution, further illustrates my favorite constitutional trivia question: what was one of the first proposed amendments to the Constitution that still has yet to be ratified and desperately needs to be? We'll answer that. Also, we'll talk about the transgender driver's license voter purge in the state of Kansas. But before we get to all the serious political stuff, we've got time for three quick hits.
Kitty is every woman's wild side.
It's wrong to destroy literature.
You got the 2,000 reward.
I want to give a shout out to my 2,000th follower on Blue Sky. That's right, we've hit 2,000. The account is Kitty Literature, like Kitty Cat, right? Kitty Literature, Blue Sky's social account. She's an unemployed writer, a lit crit student, and an anti-Zionist Jew. I'm all for that. Horror, sci-fi, culture, album reviews, landscaper and gardener, anti-AI, anti-slop, Antifa book club, arm the gays, pirate everything, posting dumb opinions and looking for toxic people to vibe with. Hey, that sounds like me. Welcome to the feed, Kitty. Nice to have you here. And jeers going out to Velocity Clinical Research, who wasted my time yesterday, and they are the reason why you're getting this podcast on Tuesday rather than Monday. See, I got recruited for a clinical research study on COVID-19. Had me fill out these forms online, and part of these forms are to ask you your various health questions and like all your surgeries and the medicines you're taking and so forth. And it gets to the question where it asks if you're a smoker. And I'm like, well, tobacco, which is always the answer cannabis smokers give. But it didn't specify, and next to it, after smoker, it also had a part to fill out how many packs per day. And I see that, and I figure, well, packs per day, that's tobacco. So no, I'm not a smoker. I check that I'm not a smoker. It continues on, and it doesn't ask any questions, or it asks questions about recreational drug use, which I've done in the past, but do not currently, as I am a medical cannabis patient. So, having filled out all those forms, they give me a call and let me know, yes, we'll set you up for a time, drive out to Medford, Oregon, just 53 miles away. We'll pay for your travel costs and reimburse you $100 for 2 hours of your time. Okay, so I put the podcast on hold and I made my way there to Medford. Get there, they have me fill out all these forms. Again, some of it redundant information from the online forms, which is pretty typical. And it gets to the part where it says, list out your medications, all medications, including over-the-counter and supplements. So I list out all the various things, fish oil and ibuprofen and so forth. And I also list cannabis, because that is one of the medications I am on. That caused the researcher a little bit of consternation, and he wanted to know, how do I use my cannabis? I said, well, I smoke it herbally. Oh, okay. This led to me having to sit there for the next 20 minutes while he went back and forth with the directors of the research survey to discover whether or not cannabis smoker counts as smoker. And it turns out that it does. Cannabis smoker counts as smoker, which means that I could not be reimbursed for my gas nor my time having gone out there and given up my Monday day off and podcasting recording day to have been there. Friends, I was none too happy at that moment, but I maintained my composure, and I said to the gentleman, you know you're running a research study in a state that's had legal medical cannabis for 28 years, and you know you're running this study in Southern Oregon, where the weed is from. Don't you think it would behoove you on your intake forms, on your recruitment, to specify whether or not someone is a cannabis consumer for medical or recreational purposes? before you waste 4 gallons of gas and 3 hours of their time? He was quite embarrassed and said that they would look into fixing that, and I encouraged them to do so. So that was my Monday, and that's why you're getting a late podcast. Sorry about that.
That's an awful accent you have there.
I hope you will never get tired of my terrible accent.
I got a lousy temper and a bloody awful accent. I know I sound toffee nose.
Why do you think I have this outrageous accent, you silly king?
I had a story come across my feed here that just absolutely cracked me up. It's coming out of Washington State, and it has to do with people calling this Washington State hotline. And they call the hotline, and it's got that part, you know, where you can press 1 for English or press 2 for Spanish, right? And so when you press 2 for Spanish, what you get is an AI voice that speaks English with a Spanish accent. Oh my God, that cracked me up. It immediately flashed me back to the old Steve Martin Wild and Crazy Guy album I had when I was a little kid. He has this routine. He says, I went to Paris, France, and chapeau means hat. Oof means egg. It's like these French have a different word for everything. I got into the cab and I said, I would like to go to the hotel. And he turns to me and says, Vontasui, the little soir. And so I said, I would like to go to the hotel. Oh, good job, Washington State. And speaking of AI slop, I'll have something to say about that a little bit later in the program as well.
Our dear vegetable man is on his way to a concentration camp.
We all go to the concentration camp for life and deny it's cut off in the bargain.
An old man who profited by the property expropriation of every man he sent to a concentration camp.
I keep seeing news reports about locals in various states. I think the latest one was New Mexico, that are battling the opening of either these AI data centers, these massive water-consuming hogs that just destroy the environment so they can create the AI slop that is oftentimes wrong. Again, I will talk a little bit more about that later in the program. Or they're gathering together to fight against these ICE migrant concentration camps that they want to set up in these big, massive warehouses that are not at all equipped to handle the human habitation. They're like Amazon type of warehouses for products, which, again, that's what they said they wanted to treat migrants like. They wanted to be the Amazon of deportations. You know, just scan a barcode on a person as if he's a product, right? God, you remember the good old days when these big, massive warehouses that we were battling weren't for concentration camps or plagiarism machines, but instead to service the big box stores that were destroying local retail in our hometowns? Ah, memories.
Our top story tonight.
Our top story tonight.
Our top story tonight.
Our top story tonight.
We're on a mission from God.
Yeah, we're on a mission from God.
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 Well, of course, the big news over the weekend was that we started World War III, I guess. I woke up to that. That was fun to hear. Yes, we've bombed Iran, and there's continuing ongoing conflict, kinetic warfare, shooting war, boots on the ground, our own U.S. service members being killed. And I'm not going to give stats or specifics at this point because it's a weekly podcast, and by the time you're listening to this, things may have completely changed and I might not have all the information right in the first place. But I just want to talk big picture here about what's going on. And first of all, I think everyone needs to understand this in the context of these guys being on a mission from God. I liken it to Elwood Blues and the Blues Brothers. We're on a mission from God, which, like, if you look at the Blues Brothers movie from the perspective of law enforcement, here you got a guy who knocked over a liquor store and just got out of the Joliet pen, who teams up with his homeless ne'er-do-well brother. They tear through a shopping mall and commit thousands and thousands of dollars of destruction and endanger lives. You know, all these police chases, right? Chased by the Nazis. You know, from the perspective of the police, you got to be thinking, what do we got to do? We got all these cop cars. We got everybody going after them, and they still succeed. Why? Because they're on a mission from God. And that's what these guys are on, a mission from God. I want to bring up this post that came across the feed. This is being reported in numerous locations. I'll just read from the post. As first reported by independent journalist Jonathan Larson, a U.S. combat unit commander told non-commissioned officers, NCOs, sergeants, that the war on Iran is part of, quote, God's divine plan, end quote. Allegedly claiming President Donald Trump was, quote, anointed by Jesus to ignite Armageddon. The complaint filed with the Military Religious Freedom Foundation is one of more than 110 logged within 48 hours from over 40 units across at least 30 installations. Complainants include Christians, a Muslim, and a Jew, who have all requested anonymity to avoid retaliation. The Pentagon has yet to respond. And this is something I've been reporting on my blogs, you know, for the past couple of decades, is the infiltration of white Christian nationalism into our United States military. And it is full throat now. And you got to figure there are soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, guards, guardians in the Space Force, all of our enlisted personnel, who have to be thinking about which are the ones that went to church and which are the ones that didn't, and are the ones that are part of this white Christian nationalist mission from God going to find all of us soldiers who are more secular, who aren't religious, and doubt us and put us out of positions of leadership, or worse, frag us on the battlefield. This is why you don't want to have religion in your politics. And I've been saying this is something that's been inevitable since the mid-1950s, when we took E Pluribus Unum out and put in God We Trust, when we inserted under God into our Pledge of Allegiance. No offense to God, and I'm sure he doesn't take it, he's bigger than that, but that's why you can't, the reason you can't have religion in your government is because you can't subpoena God. You can't call God to testify. You can't enter God into evidence. You can only enter what people say God said into evidence. You can only enter what some people say a book said into evidence. And now that is dictatorial. That's authoritarian. That is an authority you cannot question. You cannot subpoena. You cannot cross-examine, subject to rules of evidence and logic. So no offense to the religious people, that's the joy, that's the beauty of America, as we create a secular system in which all religions can exist and none can be superior to each other. Because you start having religion in your government, and the question then becomes which one, and whose interpretation of which one, and which particular sect of which one. So you don't want to have that. And that's the path that we are already on in this mission from God that's going on right now, this Operation Epstein Fury. Now, Don't confuse me as to saying that Donald Trump's on a mission from God. Well, in a sense he is. It's just he thinks he's God. He's on a mission for Donald Trump. He's on a mission to die comfortably in a bed. That's his mission right now. He keeps talking about he's not going to get into heaven, right? He knows that if the midterms go south on him, that it's impeachment time. He knows that once he's out of office, prosecutions can resume. And we haven't forgotten about the Epstein files. Nowadays, everybody want to talk like they got something to say, but nothing comes out when they move their lips. Just a bunch of gibberish, and motherfuckers act like they forgot about Jeffrey Epstein. We have not forgot about Jeffrey Epstein. We found out now that in 2019, the feds blocked the state of New Mexico from investigating Epstein's, 7,000-acre Zorro Ranch? You know, where you could be burying bodies by the dozens and no one would know, out in the middle of nowhere. Blocked the state probe. And basically what they did, as I understood it, as it was explained, you remember David Pecker? Yeah, Pecker. You remember David Pecker from the National Enquirer, and his gig around 2016, 2015, when Trump was running for president, was called Catch and Kill? You catch all these stories of Donald Trump's bad dealings and ne'er-do-well activities, and you pay for the rights, the exclusive rights to broadcast that story, but then you never broadcast that story. It's catch and kill, right? So that's what they did with all these stories about Trump, you know, paying for abortions or whatever. Well, what happened here with the New Mexico Zorro Ranch is the Fed swooped in and said, oh, state of New Mexico and your crime solving, FBI, whatever they call it, bureau there in New Mexico, you don't need to be handling the Zorro Ranch thing. We need to take this New Mexico thing federal. We need to fold this in because there's so many locations. There's the New Mexico location. There's the New York penthouse. There's the Palm Beach residence. There's the little St. James Island, little Epstein Island down there. So there's so many jurisdictions. We need to fold it and make it all one federal thing. So there's not duplicative work being going on. There's not people stepping on each other's toes. We'll all have it coordinated at the federal level. And then they didn't do anything with it. Catch and kill. They just catch and kill the whole New Mexico investigation. So now lawmakers in the state of New Mexico are fighting back, passing laws. They're going to start investigating that. So that's coming out. The other thing that came out was the revelation that 60 pages of FBI witness testimony, witness interviews with the 13-year-old girl who alleged that Donald Trump raped and beat her, that the FBI investigated and spoke to her four times. Not like, this isn't like somebody just some crank posted something online. They found this credible enough to go talk to her four times. Found out that the Justice Department or Injustice Department has redacted or kept that offline. So the cover up is in full swing here. And this is causing even a lot of the diehard MAGA to start to lose it, because even if you can get to the point where you think Donald Trump is the hero of QAnon, who is the outsider who's going to expose the evil Democratic pedophile cabal, right? Even if you can get to the point where Donald Trump is totally innocent, absolutely, the guy who owned the beauty pageants and snuck in backstage and talked publicly about lusting after his daughter and spoke on a tape about how you can grab women by the pussy, even if you can believe that guy was completely innocent of anything going on with the Epstein thing, he's now the president and has all the files and is not getting them released to expose the Democratic elite pedophile cabal. So even some of the diehard MAGA are getting to this point where, like, the cognitive dissonance is far too great to uphold this fiction. So Trump knows this is coming. The walls are closing in. Trump's on his own mission from God, his own God, the golden calf himself, Donald Trump, so that his old, fat, saggy, colostomy bag ass dies in a comfortable bed rather than in a prison cell or on a trial or who knows, Mussolini style. That's his mission. But everybody else below him, he's their useful idiot. He's their handy puppet. He's their Cyrus, if you want to get biblical on it. He's the vessel through which God can enact the plan or whatever, right? So they see Trump as flawed. That's why every time someone comes up against these MAGA, these evangelical types, and try to say, well, how can you believe in Donald Trump when he's three times divorced and committed all this adultery and he's such a sinner, right? That's not going to work because, like, that's part of the plan. That was part of the gig, is that, the flawed vessel would come forth, and that is the vessel through whom all of us good godly men like J.D. Vance and such can enact, God's will. Repeal the 19th Amendment, turn women back into property, put the gays back in the closet, execute the transgenders, kick all the immigrants out, like God would want, right? He's godly men. Anyway, he's just the vessel, but they are on a mission from God. And if this report, out of all, 40 different units across 30 different installations of NCOs, we're talking about the guys who really get the work done, running the privates, running the corporals, running the squads. That these guys are openly being proselytized to, that this is part of a rapture end times final plan. Annihilate Iran and congregate all the Jews back in Israel so Christ can return. Oh, and forcibly convert the Jews. That's part of the plan, right, too, right? They never mention that when they're all so friendly with Israel. So the war is on. We've bombed apparently a girls' school. And the reporting out that I'm getting here on Tuesday morning is, oops, it was a bad map. Yeah, we killed, 80, 100, some odd 7 to 12 year old girls. We just had, it was like, when your Google Maps makes you take a wrong turn on a road that's not there no more. Yeah, it's like that. We just had a bad map and killed, a whole bunch of people's daughters, a bunch of little girls. Shocking that Donald Trump should try to distract us from his alleged rape and beating of a 13-year-old girl by killing 100 of them. And the idiocy, of course, the idiots that are in charge, Pete Kegsbreath going on about, we won't have any rules of engagement, stupid rules of engagement, that he's not smart enough or schooled enough in the military to understand the rules of engagement protect your own soldiers more than they protect the other soldiers, right? We want to have some moral ground to stand on when we talk about not torturing people and subjecting them to cruel and unusual punishment. So when we do it to others, they get the green light to do it to our soldiers too. Trump's out there bragging about how badass we are, but he can't, 12 different justifications. He comes out, I think he came out of this thinking, we'll go into Iran, like George W. Bush did in Iraq. And George W. Bush was somewhat unpopular leading up to Iraq. And then 9/11 happens, and then he gets this wartime president mantle by going into Iraq. His approval rating got as high as in the 90s, I believe, at one point. So I think Trump thought that would happen. Yeah, we'll go in shock and awe, blow a bunch of stuff up. That'll excite everybody, distract him from Epstein. My ratings go up. But stupid can't understand that he's in a different context now that, we haven't suffered a 9/11 and we've already been through an Iraq and Afghanistan that took 20 years and trillions of dollars and cost 4,000 some odd American lives. We've already played this game before. Nobody wants a reboot of this with stupider, older leadership. So it's backfired on him. It's deeply unpopular, even on the right of the MAGA base. So many of them were part of this. Donald Trump won't start wars. We don't want any forever wars. And yet, throughout my entire lifetime, like clockwork, every single Republican president gets into office, cuts programs for the poor, lowers taxes for the rich, gets us into an unwinnable war overseas, and crashes the economy. And then the Democrat gets elected, tries to fix some of that stuff, and things go pretty good, but then they don't campaign well, and then the Republican wins, and we're back to wars and economic ruin again. Rinse and repeat my entire life since Nixon. Trump's out there bragging about how we attacked 7 Iranian vessels, and now they're floating at the bottom of the sea. Floating at the bottom of the sea. See, when something's floating, it's not at, you can't, float doesn't mean you can, if you're at the bottom, you just, God, this man. And I'm the guy that smokes the weed. You're messing with my high, dude. And I tell you, if we have to go through this whole Middle Eastern war thing again, can we do it this time without the goddamn magnetic yellow ribbons? Oh, please, can we not have the yellow ribbons, the support the troops ribbons on the cars? Who's got more yellow ribbons? How many different? Oh, if you weren't there, man, if you were there, you remember. And of course, this is going to have repercussions all over the world. Don't think that Iran's just going to sit back and take this. Haven't been planning this. This isn't a country of 90 million people that's been planning this for 40 years. That what's going to happen when finally Israel gets the United States to pull the trigger. They've got cells all over the place. They got terrorists all over the place already. And I don't know if you've heard of it because you know how mass shootings don't really make the news much here in America anymore. But there was one in Austin, Texas. Some 14, 15 people shot. I don't remember how many dead, but reports are coming out that this may have been terrorist related, that the guy may have circled many times, that he had some sort of Iranian, pro-Iranian shirt on or something when he shot everybody up. And I don't know, man. Terrorists, if you're going to do terrorism in America, you're going to have to do better than a drive-by mass shooting. I mean, that's like homegrown shit. I mean, we can do that. We do that better than you do. How are we supposed to know that it's terrorism if you're just going to do what we do to ourselves, right? You're going to have to get a little more creative than that if you want to make it a terrorism thing. The other thing I see circulating on the web about this is Barron Trump, draft Barron Trump, you know, Trump's oldest boy. He's 18 now, 18, 19, something like that. He's of fighting age. Serve in the military, Barron Trump. Come on, sign up. I hope the bone spurs aren't hereditary. He doesn't have the bone spurs. But that some of the right wingers, the White House actually responded to this Barron Trump thing, draft Barron Trump. They said, well, Barron Trump is 6'9" tall. He's far too tall to be serving in the military. David Robinson says, what? The Admiral? You remember the Admiral from the NBA, David Robinson? That they called him the Admiral, the 7-footer, because he served in the Navy? Very famously, you know, served in the Navy, played for Navy, had shots of him in his white naval outfit at 7 foot tall. They could get him on a ship. Come on, Barron. And you know, it's not as if even if it was draft Barron Trump, it'd be like, well, you probably don't remember because I don't remember. I wasn't there. But like Elvis served in the military, too. Right. But like they didn't put Elvis on the front lines. You know what I'm saying? They're not going to put Elvis, you know, in a tank or nothing. The same thing, you know, the princes in England, they serve in their military. Some of them actually do some combat sort of missions. But no, here in America, no, I don't think so, right? I think if Barron Trump were even drafted, it'd be some ceremonial rear echelon motherfucker, you know, accounting at the Pentagon or something, a public relations at the USO, I don't know. But even that they wouldn't do. You couldn't even get a Trump to do that. The idea of service and sacrifice to a Trump. And now to have these soldiers under a commander-in-chief who has openly shown disdain for John McCain. He likes those war heroes who weren't shot down. I wonder how the families of the 6 service members who have lost their lives being shot down in planes, which, by the way, the U.S. Air Force has been pretty good against everybody except lately under Trump. How those families must feel getting that folded flag from a commander-in-chief who thought that they were suckers and losers. Couldn't be bothered to go out and march in a parade for them out in France because it was raining and he'd get his hair wet. Wonder how they feel. How I feel. And I don't know what we're going to get out of the Congress on this. I hear Chris Murphy, the senator from Connecticut. Every time I hear a clip from him or see him on my social media feed, I keep thinking, why isn't this guy the majority leader? He's clear about what's going on. He seems to understand the stakes, what's at play. But we got to be led by Chuck, $1.7 million from AIPAC Schumer, the America-Israel Public Affairs Committee, the super PAC that donates money to politicians to make sure that America's policies are good for Israel. I've struggled to even understand why this is an allowed thing. And I'm not just talking about AIPAC. I'm talking about any country. Like, why should there be a political lobbying group with millions of dollars to spend, to give, that these foreign aligned interests can give to our United States representatives and senators to affect our United States policy? I don't get it. And I wish the Democratic Party had more people in it that would refuse to take these kind of donations, because I can't see how that's not a conflict against your loyalty to America if you're taking donations from a political committee designated for a country that's not America. I don't get it. Anyway, we got Chuck Schumer, $1.7 million lifetime from AIPAC, and then Hakeem Jeffries in the House, $829,000. Lifetime from AIPAC. So what's it? Can they be against this war, or are they just, oh, you should have got our permission first? Because I'm against this war. I'm even against the next war. We haven't been attacked in the United States. The Pentagon has come out. The experts there said there was no imminent threat to the United States. Trump himself, back in June, I guess it was, said that we'd already obliterated Iran's nuclear program. I guess they're really quick at rebuilding nuclear programs there in Iran. Yeah, the best scientists in the world. 6 months, boom, we can put it back together. You know, this makes Trump the first president since FDR and Truman to bomb 7 countries in a year. 7 countries. Iraq, Iran, Somalia, Yemen, Nigeria, Venezuela, and Syria. Yeah, I guess he's bored of peace. Yeah, this is no conduct fitting of the FIFA Peace Prize winner or a Nobel Peace Prize recipient through threats and intimidation and coercion. He's bored of peace. They wouldn't give, oh, well, you wouldn't give me the Peace Prize. I guess I should go to war. That's what we got to deal with here in the United States of America. I sure hope and pray for our troops, for their safety under this mad leadership, even to be safe from the white Christian nationalists who are the commanders above them, treating them as pawns in some book of Revelation end times fantasy. It's no way to run the military. It's no way to run the country. And it's time for the citizens of America, religious and secular alike, Christian, Muslim, Jew, Hindu, Sikh, Buddhist, I don't care what it is, Wiccans, everybody needs to come together and assert that this is a secular democracy with religious pluralism. All the religious folks need to get together and understand that if we don't band together and fight against this white Christian nationalism, then that becomes the religion. And you become second-class citizens under it. All need to band together for a secular government to keep God out of government. God belongs in our churches, our synagogues, our mosques, our forests, our hearts, wherever. But not in our state houses, not in our U.S. Capitol, not in our Supreme Court, not in our legislature. All the religions need to band together on this, and secular people too need to band together and understand this. Not from a hateful perspective of hating religion or what it can do, but from the perspective of we all need to respect each other's beliefs because those beliefs define who we are, and we must treat all people equally. It's why I bristle a little bit at the the Texas Senate race between Tallarico and Crockett, because I like Tallarico, but I don't think the answer to right-wing religion in our government is left-wing religion in our government. I think the answer is no religion in our government. They're on a mission from God. I hope more people understand that and start treating them accordingly.
Now, before this motion is put to a vote, I'd like to propose an amendment.
The aforementioned two-thirds majority needed to pass an amendment.
Don't waste that power on an amendment bill that's sure of defeat.
One of the things that came out as this war with Iran began over the weekend was a call from the leadership in Congress to all of the representatives to hurry back to Washington, D.C. so that we could take a vote on a war powers resolution. And when I heard that, something just clicked in me regarding my favorite little bit of constitutional amendment trivia. First of all, we have to get everybody back into one particular room in order for us to record a vote on something in the 21st century when we can get money from our ATM anywhere in the world, when we do electronic transactions all the time, safely and securely. We can't find a way to record a vote from our representatives when they're back at home. We got to gather them all together back in Washington, D.C., and of course, depend on the fact that flights will be available and people will be able to make it, etc. Isn't it time we updated this antiquated system? And to that end, I bring you back to my little bit of constitutional trivia, and that is when the U.S. Constitution was originally proposed and ratified, they then found out they had to put together a bunch of amendments afterwards, and we call those the Bill of Rights. But when the Bill of Rights were first proposed, there were 12 of them, not 10. We've got our famous 10 Bill of Rights from, you know, First Amendment, freedom of speech, religion, assembly, petitioning, and the press, the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms, Third Amendment, we can't quarter soldiers in our home, Fourth Amendment, unreasonable search and seizures, Fifth Amendment, no double jeopardy, no self-incrimination, Sixth Amendment, right to criminal trial, speedy criminal trial and representation, Seventh Amendment, right to civil suits over $20, Eighth Amendment, no cruel and unusual punishment, Ninth Amendment, Personal Rights Amendment, and 10th Amendment, the States' Rights Amendment. I wonder how many MAGA can do that, by the way. Can't get part half of the Second Amendment. But anyway, that's the 10 that we know as the Bill of Rights, but there were 12 that were proposed. And the ones that are our 10 Bill of Rights are numbers 3 through 12. So there was a number 1 and a number 2 that were proposed but never ratified by the original 13 states. Now, the second of those is now a constitutional amendment. It's our last constitutional amendment. It's the 27th Amendment, the one that says that Congress can't raise its own pay. That you have to, that Congress can raise pay, but it doesn't take effect until the next Congress. So you can't raise your own pay. And this was ratified some, you know, 190 years or so after it was first proposed, maybe 200 years or so after it was first proposed. Some student at the University of Oklahoma went back and saw that those two amendments that were first proposed, well, there's no time limit on ratifying them. And then back in the 90s, there was this kind of this thing about Congress and it being kind of corrupt and raising its own pay. And back in the Clinton administration, back in the 90s, this 200-year-old amendment that had been sitting there waiting to be ratified got the other states it needed to ratify, and boom, we got the 27th Amendment. So there remains one that is known as Article the First. It's the first proposal in the Bill of Rights. And what it does is it argues for a guaranteed proportional representation in the House of Representatives. That is, and let me read you the text of the proposal. After the first enumeration required by the first article of the Constitution, and that's just after the census, right? There shall be one representative for every 30,000 until the number shall amount to 100. After which the proportion shall be so regulated by Congress that there shall not be less than 100 representatives, nor less than one representative for every 40,000 persons, until the number of representatives shall amount to 200, after which the proportion shall be so regulated by Congress that there shall not be less than 200 representatives, nor more than one representative for every 50,000 persons. Now, that's a lot of words. That's a lot of words to... That's like one of those nightmare story problems from the SATs, right? But here's basically what it means. There's got to be one representative in Congress for every 30,000 people until the population gets to 3 million people. Because that would be up to 100 representatives for 30,000. 100 times 30,000 is 3 million. So until the population of the United States is 3 million people, there's one representative for every 30,000 people. After that, there's one representative for 40,000 people until we get to 8 million people. And then after 8 million people, we got to have one representative for every 50,000 people. Now, why? What's the point behind this? Why did they want to have... Well, it was argued in the Federalist Papers. James Madison argued for this, and George Washington did too. Originally, they were just going to have a flat, there's got to be one representative for every 40,000 people. George Washington actually weighed in on this and said, nah, we ought to start that at one in every 30,000. And it's really the only thing George Washington ever opined on when it came to how we were going to organize the country. And why were they so set on this ratio of 1 to 30,000, 1 to 40,000, or 1 to 50,000? In Federalist number 95, and I'm just getting this straight off Wikipedia, James Madison argued that the size of the House of Representatives has to balance the ability of that body to legislate with the need for legislators to have a relationship close enough to the people to understand their local circumstances, that such representatives' social class be low enough to sympathize with the feelings of the mass of the people, and that their power be diluted enough to limit their abuse of public trust and interests. And then you can read the actual Federalist quote there, that it's Federalist number 55, if you want to look this stuff up. But basically, the argument here is, you want to have representatives representing just a fewer amount of people so that they know what those people want. And you want to have a large House of Representatives so that any one of them can't, being corrupted, can't corrupt the House, the whole House, right? Any one representative can't gain a whole mass of power. They're only representing 50,000 people. So that's kind of the way Congress did apportions for the House of Representatives up until the 1900s. They did keep increasing the size of the House, passing laws. The House will now be 150 people. Now it'll be 175, whatever. I don't know the actual numbers, but they kept increasing it over time until we get to the 1900s when they passed the Permanent Reapportionment Act that set our current number at 435 representatives. Well, the number of representatives has stayed at 435, but the U.S. population has continued to increase to the point now where one representative, the average size of a district that they're representing, is 750,000 people. There are representatives in the House of Representatives who represent more people than some senators represent in their entire state. And that's completely antithetical to what Madison was talking about there as far as gathering too much power in the hands of the single one representative. And we've seen how that's worked now, where they can corrupt a Jim Jordan on this committee and somebody else on that committee. And before you know it, you've got a compromised house with only a few dozen legislators that you've had to purchase. So it seems the founders had the idea that we would continue to increase the size of the House as the size of the United States increased as well. So, if we were to ratify Article the First, where would we be? If we were to say, yeah, we shouldn't have districts that are 750,000, they ought to be much smaller, like one representative for every 50,000 people. Well, given the United States population today, you know where that would put us? I swear to God, this is true. 6,660 representatives. We'd have a Congress of 6,660 representatives. Now, people hear that and they go, come on now. That's ridiculous. That's a small stadium full of people. Couldn't have that many people. That's ridiculous. Well, I don't know that it is. First of all, let's get away from the idea that all of these people would have to be sitting in one room in one city on the East Coast to make this all happen. Let's get serious about setting up an online House of Representatives where they can meet online through Zoom calls. They can have their committee hearings through Zoom, and these representatives would stay at home. They wouldn't fly to Washington, D.C. on a Monday, do 3 days of work Tuesday through Thursday, fly home on a Friday, spending all that money, taxpayer money, on their travel to get back and forth to Washington, D.C. Have them sit in their office in Dubuque, Iowa, in Kankakee, Wisconsin, in Metairie, Louisiana, wherever the hell they might be, in their 50,000-person districts. They're there at their office, in their little virtual studio with their headset on, in their committee hearing, in their markup procedures, in their meetings, whatever the hell it is that they do in the House. Now, there may be some things that require more security than that. I understand things that need SCIFs, secure facilities. And in those situations, sure, we have the dozen committee members of that particular committee fly to Washington, D.C. and go into the secure room. Yeah, there's going to be all sorts of exceptions to the rule where they're going to have to fly in, actually physically be in one place. And maybe, Maybe there's situations where they do have to have all 6,660 of them in one big room. Hell, let's take over that Trump ballroom and just make that the big old 6,660-seater. But regardless, I think the idea of having a small district of 50,000 people and a representative who's always there at that district in that office where his one of his 50,000 constituents has a much better opportunity to get some face time with the guy or gal could have a much more responsive House of Representatives. And of course, I think it'd be much more representative of the people as a whole, because capping the House at 435 unfairly dilutes the power of large states like California because of the minimum given to small states like Wyoming. Such a minimum would still exist. There'd still be at least one representative, etc., per 50,000 people, but that gives you something like 14 reps in Wyoming and something like 750 or so in California. It better reflects the power dynamic between those two states. Keep them at home. Keep them in small districts. Now, there is some math about this that there's a problem with, though. The way that it's actually written out, the text of it, if you write it out as a mathematical formula, does kind of create some problems. But this has been addressed by some historians who suggest that it could be adjudicated that what the founders intended here was that every time the population goes up by 10,000, the House of Representatives goes up by 100. And under that scenario, we wouldn't have the one for every 50,000 with 6,660 representatives. It would be at our current population, there would be one representative for every 200,000 people, and that would give us a Congress of about 1,800. So, you know, it would be 4.5 times the size it is now, and the districts would be about a third or less the size, maybe a fourth the size. So that might be a good compromise. And under that scenario, if you buy that idea that the founders wanted an increase 100 per 10,000, we wouldn't get to our districts of 750,000 people in a district until the U.S. population was 5.4 billion people. So we're definitely going the wrong direction by keeping our house capped at 435, keeping our districts at 750,000. Take a look at Article the First. You can find, there's a website out there called articlethefirst.net. The Wikipedia page is also pretty good on Article the First. But let's increase the size of the House, increase the proportional representation, and let's have them do a lot of this stuff online and stop wasting all that jet fuel.
Ladies and gentlemen, and invited transgender species,
I want to give you a few lessons about being transgender.
Gay, straight, transgender, black, white, purple, awesome.
So I got to talk a little bit about this transgender driver's license voter purge in Kansas. If you haven't heard the news, the state of Kansas passed this law, and then the governor vetoed it, and then the Republican legislature overrode the veto to pass this law that mandates that a driver's license in the state of Kansas has to have a gender marker on it that matches the gender you were assigned at birth, and this takes place immediately. There is no waiting period. There is no time to get your stuff in order. Right now, if you're transgender in the state of Kansas and you got a driver's license that says F on it, but you were born M, or says M on it and you were born F, that is no longer a valid driver's license. It's no longer valid identification. And if you're caught driving with it, you will be arrested for driving on a suspended license. This is some unadulterated bullshit. First of all, when it comes to driving, why do I care what a doctor thought when he saw your infant genitals? What does it matter that a doctor saw a pee-pee or a hoo-hoo when you were born? And then we have to declare that on your driver's license. Make sure everybody knows, when you were a little tiny baby, did you have a pee-pee or a hoo-hoo? What? What is this? It's so ridiculous, right? Now, okay, maybe your argument is that, well, we needed to properly identify someone, like your height and your weight and your hair color and your eye color. We need to know your gender. Well, if that's the case, then putting the wrong gender marker on for the transgender person does a disservice in identifying him, doesn't it? You pull over this beautiful blonde woman named Stephanie, the nice low-cut blouse and little cleavage, and then you look on her marker and it says M. How is that helping you identify Stephanie at that point? Why do you need to know that Stephanie, when she was an infant, had a pee-pee? What is the point of that? Now, maybe the argument is, well, if we arrest Stephanie, if we arrest one of these people, or one of these people are injured, we need to know what kind of medical care to give them. They might be pregnant. We need to know if they have to have a certain medication, or if we have to take them to jail, we have to know which jail to take them to, which is, of course, cruel in this case. Now, talking about identifying the transgender person contrary to their gender identity and then taking them to the opposite jail, you're going to take Stephanie to the men's jail now. You take blonde Stephanie to the men's jail now and expect that she's going to be safe and secure. It's just insane. And it's I was going to say pointlessly cruel, but it's not. The cruelty is the point. And to add insult to injury in the state of Kansas, you've got to have photo ID, usually a driver's license, to vote. So now these people can't vote against the politicians that just made the law that made it that they can't drive. And how about these people? They got jobs to do. They got jobs to go to. They can't get in their car and drive. They're caught, they're arrested, and then they're put in the jail that doesn't match their gender identity. It's an attempt to eradicate transgender people. I don't even understand why we have the gender marker on the license in the first place. I don't see that we need it in any sort of way, like as if the weight that's on my driver's license is accurate, as if the hair color on my driver's license is accurate to describe people. The driver's license has a photo on it. That's how we identify who the hell you are. But now this is just a way to put transgender people in the closet to make their lives more difficult, to take them off the voter rolls. And as I thought about this law, I thought about it and they said, you know, your driver's license now in the state of Kansas is invalid and you'll have to go to the DMV to get your new driver's license, to get your driver's license gender marker switched to your assigned gender at birth. And so I got to thinking about that. How are they supposed to get to the DMV? What are they supposed to do? Go to the hitchhike to the DMV? Are they supposed to walk to the DMV? Are they supposed to catch a ride and pay money to an Uber or public transportation to get to the DMV? What if they live way out in bumfuck Kansas? I understand there's such a place. Bumfuck Kansas. There's no buses, there's no Greyhounds, there's no Ubers, there's no taxis, and they're disabled. They can't walk. How's that transgender person supposed to be able to change their ID to their gender marker so that they can drive? How are they supposed to change their gender ID marker so that they can vote? And the more I thought about this, the more I thought of Dr. Timothy Leary. Remember Dr. Timothy Leary? Tune in. Turn on, drop out, the acid guru from the 70s. Well, he also has a mark in United States Supreme Court history in a case called Leary versus U.S. And what it had to do with was my subject of expertise, the prohibition of marijuana. Sit back and listen to old Radical Russ tell you a little tale here about how Timothy Leary and marijuana prohibition might be a way to fight the transgender driver's license purge in Kansas. See, when Congress originally made marijuana illegal, they didn't say nobody can buy or sell marijuana. Because back in those days, they didn't think that Congress had the power to tell people whether or not they could buy or sell anything. Regulate commerce, sure. Ban commerce? Not in the Constitution. So the way they got around that is they wrote a little act in 1937 called the Marijuana Tax Act, marijuana with an H. Marijuana Tax Act of 1937 that said, oh, you can buy and sell marijuana, you can possess marijuana, you can grow marijuana, you just have to have your tax stamp. You have to pay X amount of tax per pound of marijuana that you grow or possess. And if you don't have that tax stamp, Well, now we can bust you for not having your tax stamp, you tax evader. And it just so happens we're not going to give out any tax stamps. Or we're only going to give out a tiny few tax stamps. So you really can't get your tax stamp, so marijuana is illegal. And this is the way they kept marijuana illegal for years. From 1937 all the way up into the 60s, when Dr. Timothy Leary, who's this professor at Harvard, he's getting into the acid culture and the counterculture and all of that, and he gets into the weed as well. And he takes a look at this marijuana tax act and he says, wait a minute. If I have marijuana in my hand and I don't have a tax stamp, that marijuana is illegal. So if I want to be a person who has marijuana who follows the law, I have to take this illegal marijuana into the government, have them put my illegal marijuana on a scale, and then tell me how much tax I have to pay to get my stamps for my illegal marijuana. And then once I pay for those stamps and I put the stamps on my marijuana, it's now legal. If at any point during that process, they didn't bust me for having illegal marijuana, right? And then Dr. Leary noted that that's a Fifth Amendment violation. The Fifth Amendment of the Constitution says you cannot be compelled to testify against yourself. That's what they always, when a Trump raises their hand, they say, well, I take the Fifth Amendment. Well, they're saying you can't testify against yourself, but government having a law that requires you to admit that you're breaking a law in order to pass to be legal under the law is self-incrimination. And the Supreme Court agreed. In the case Leary versus U.S., they found the Marijuana Tax Act to be unconstitutional under the Fifth Amendment because you had to break the law to follow the law. How does that not apply to the Kansas City transgender driver's license voter purge? If I'm a disabled transgender person in bumfuck Kansas with no access to public transportation or Uber rides, no way to walk there, no friends to take me there to the driver's DMV, and if there's no way to do this online or by mail, you're forcing me to have to break the law. You're forcing me to have to drive to the DMV to be legal under the law to drive to the DMV. How is that not a Fifth Amendment violation like Leary versus U.S.? I don't know. Maybe some smart Kansas lawyers are going to have to take this one up. I'm no lawyer at all. I am just a retired marijuana legalizer and bass playing pothead. So think about that. And if anyone has any ideas on that, let me know. And it goes down smooth. Hey! But that's all the time we've got for this joint. Thank you for joining us here. The Radical Russ Show is researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. News, music, video clips, and social media posts are reproduced under fair use copyright laws for commentary and analysis. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by Russ Boom Boom Belville.
What's the boom boom for?
Boom, boom, boom.
Which brings us to our post-credits scene.
Oh, God, not again.
Jesus Christ, not this again.
Is that absolutely necessary?
Lady Love and I are continuing our Netflix night. You can check it out, hashtag Netflix night on Blue Sky. And we are continuing to binge the amazing BBC sci-fi action drama Orphan Black. If you have not seen this show, oh, my goodness, it is good. Orphan Black stars Tatiana Maslany playing like, I don't know, 6-7 different characters at this point. We just got to the episode where she meets the transgender one of herself. Anyway, Tatiana Maslany plays a woman who discovers she's one of many clones of an illegal cloning experiment. And so she has to find all the other clones of herself who all live different lives, right? So she plays each one of these clone characters. And it's just amazing, like totally new gait and speech patterns and accents and makeup. And she has scenes where she's in the room with three or four of herself. So, you know, all these scenes are acted in green screen, kind of multiple shots. And you have to pinch yourself to say that she's not four different people. She's so good at this. Oh, my God. She deserves all the accolades she got for this series. It's wonderful. And as a bonus, Max Headroom's in it. Matt Frewer, Max Headroom, is in, well, part of the series. So check it out. It's Orphan Black. It's now on Netflix. There are 5 seasons of it, so it's worth getting into, having a good binge. You can contact me by email at RadicalRuss@gmail.com. Call my message line at 877-RUSS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky as RadicalRuss.com and nowhere else. You can support this podcast financially by donating to Radical Russ on Venmo, Rad Russ on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at RadicalRuss.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next week, take care of each other.